Good afternoon, everyone. Hi, welcome. If I haven't met you, I think I have, but I'm Margot Stedman. I'm the Education and Community Engagement Director here at the Rockford Symphony. Of course, you're at Soundbites, as you know. I have behind me, as always, Mark Baldwin, our principal trumpet. And I am so pleased to introduce you all to this week's finalist that's here, Tanya Miller. We've been having a lovely week with her, learning lots and having some beautiful musical experiences as well, of course. So I'm really excited for you all to get to know her a little bit better here and enjoy another lovely conversation. Thank you again for being here.
Yes, as she mentioned, I am the principal trumpet of the Rockford Symphony and single-handedly responsible for the uptick in anti-anxiety medicine in the woodwind section for the last 42 years. And Tanya Miller is sitting next to me here and is conducting us for the week, and let's get to know her. So, tell me, what's your story? Where are you from?
Well, first of all, hello. Is this on?
It is, but you got to get really close.
Okay, so can you hear me? Excellent. I'm a conductor, so I want to be heard. So first of all, let me just say how nice it is to meet all of you. I always love these opportunities to get closer to people, not to look out from the stage into a dark space with floodlights shining on my eyes, and to know that you're out there but not to see you. In these kind of moments, I get to know people more closely, and I really love that. So first of all, thanks for having me here in Rockford. It is a delight to be with your Rockford Symphony Orchestra, a beautiful, beautiful group of people and great musicians. We are having so much fun together in rehearsals. Where am I from? I live in Vancouver, Canada. Have any of you been there? Oh my gosh, that's a lot of you. It's a beautiful place, as you know. Right now, I just left all my daffodils and all the tulips and the cherry blossoms. It's a place I feel very grateful to live in. And I've been there for about 20 years. I was the music director of an orchestra called the Victoria Symphony Orchestra on the island off of Vancouver. There is Vancouver Island, and Victoria is the capital city of British Columbia. It's a beautiful harbor town, and it has a beautiful orchestra. So I was there for 14 years, tried very much to inspire and change the world through music on that island during the course of that time. And that's really my passion, is being involved in a community and being a part of a community and sharing music with that community. And now, since I've left the Victoria Symphony, I am guest conducting in a variety of different orchestras and looking for where my next home will be. I have two boys. They are 16 and 14. And a husband, and a dog named Bandit. And there you go. That's who I am in a nutshell.
I always thought, though, a conductor should be seen and not heard.
Well,
the orchestra is the one who's making the noise. Come on.
You know? I'm just glad that this trumpet player has seen me. Sometimes they don't even look
up. Usually I don't. You know? Yeah, Steve could tell you that. You know? I don't know how many concerts I went. You were there, Steve. But,
that's right.
Oh, well. What got you into music? What gave you the bug to be a musician?
I grew up in a very small town, 1,000 people, farming community in Saskatchewan, which is above the Dakotas. And I feel very privileged that as a young girl growing up, parents who loved music, amateur performers, played accordion by mail order, that sort of thing. But, you know, a community that valued music and hockey above all else. And mostly I had a piano teacher who changed my life. She brought music to our town. My parents bought an old $400 piano that they painted black and made it look like it was they tuned it once every 6 years. But it was my passion. I played piano all of the time. And as I grew up, I think growing up in a small town, you become very important to that community through your music. So I started playing organ in the local churches. It turned out to be more than one. If a funeral happened in our community, I left school to go and play for it. Weddings. And then we had a school music program, which was really very ingrained in our culture. And every kid was a part of this band program. We marched in the spring and summer, and people would come out on their doorsteps to hear us play. So I feel like education has been, music education for young people is a big passion of mine, knowing my own background.
So what did you march with? I'm assuming it's not piano.
No, I was a clarinet player as well. That's true.
Okay. I knew I would get you to admit something like that. Where did you go to college? Where was your that?
So I started off thinking I was going to go to Carnegie Hall as a piano player. And honestly, I had no experience with orchestras because I didn't grow up anywhere near an orchestra. My first experience hearing an orchestra was at the age of 16 when I traveled a three-hour journey to go. So my undergrad was at the University of Saskatchewan, and I studied music education, and I also studied piano performance. But along the way, I discovered that conducting was actually something that I didn't know about myself, but was in there. I started conducting a choir. I started working with kids. And through that, I discovered this love for conducting. So really, I feel like I transformed from the person I've just described to you to my next self, the conductor self, when I went to a conducting program in the summers, and I met my future teacher at the University of Michigan. And I was invited to come to the University of Michigan to do a master's degree and then a doctorate there. So 5 years there, I feel, was the beginning of a new Tanya Miller. And from that time at the University of Michigan, I actually thought I would start off in opera. I started a little opera company called Michigan Opera Works. There were so many people in Ann Arbor that were fabulous singers and who were there wanting to perform. So we created a opera that was centered on Baroque opera and contemporary opera. From there, I went to the Carmel Bach Festival as the assistant conductor. So I lived out in Carmel in the summers, which was a fabulous thing. And from there, I found out about a job at the Vancouver Symphony. I auditioned for the assistant conductor job there, and I moved to Vancouver at that point. So everything, one thing leads to the next. All along the way, I was learning the art of conducting. I would say even when I was at the Vancouver Symphony, my job was to cover conduct, to be on the stage watching every conductor that came by. But I also conducted about 25 concerts a year. There was a lot to do, a lot to learn. And I just, everything I was doing was, it felt like straight up because I had no other place to go. I didn't have time. I had so much to learn, I felt. And it's just been a joy all along the way.
Who was the music director at Vancouver when you were there?
Bramwell Tovey.
Ah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. He was in his first season when I was in my first season.
He's an interesting character with one foot in the orchestra and one foot squarely in brass banding.
Yes, that's true, actually.
Which is an interesting combination because usually the two don't cross.
No,
that way.
But he's also another foot in, you know, Bramwell Tovey. One thing that he really inspired in me was the way to communicate to people about music. He was very fun. He's very spontaneous. He's very engaging, and he loved to share about music with people, and that impacted me.
So, as you came out of Michigan, and I'm sure you probably ran into a few people I know who went to Michigan at that time, did the opera and then with Vancouver. When you were in Vancouver, when did the job with Victoria come up?
So I was in Vancouver for three seasons when the job with Victoria Symphony came up. And then I got the job. So I had one more season with Vancouver where I crossed. I was doing both jobs at once. That was a busy time. And then I spent 14 years, as I said, in Victoria. And when I started in Victoria, it was 2003. At the time, I was the youngest music director in Canada and the only Canadian woman to lead a major orchestra in Canada. So it was kind of a neat time, a new starting point. For me, I was just very energized on how to bring this orchestra alive in the community. And one thing that the Victoria Symphony did that was very special, it was my very first concert with them, and you could imagine the fear. You're talking about anti-anxiety meds. I didn't know you then, but I wish I had. So Victoria Symphony, being a harbor town, every August long weekend would have a concert where they would put the orchestra on a barge. And there's a beautiful harbor all around, if any of you have been there, with a legislature building on one side and a big old hotel on another. 40,000 people would come, and in a sense, the buildings created almost like an amphitheater at the walls of the sound. The orchestra would play on the barge. We would finish with 1812 and fireworks, and the cadets from all across the island would shoot off cannons, and we always finished with Amazing Grace with bagpipers, because in Victoria, bagpipes was kind of an iconic part of the sound. So that was my very first concert with the Victoria Symphony, an audience of 40,000 people. So I've never been changed. I've been changed since then.
I have a set of bagpipes. You do not want to hear me play them.
Not in this room, for sure. Not in this room.
No. Not in any room. I haven't practiced in them in a while. Going from Vancouver to Victoria, you're going from basically a full-time orchestra in Vancouver. What did you see at the time, or what were the differences, or what did you feel you had to do different? Obviously, you were going from being an assistant to the music director, but in moving from that size orchestra to a smaller one, what changes for you?
Well, to be honest, the desire to share music with people, and the way that music can impact people doesn't change no matter which orchestra, which community you're in. I believe that an orchestra elevates a community. It brings people together in the sharing of music. It creates a community within itself. We have a community right here in this room. I feel that music changes the way we feel about ourselves within a community, and it enriches our lives so very deeply. I actually felt, coming from Vancouver and moving to Victoria, that it was an advantage. Why? Because I actually felt that the entire community knew everything we did in Victoria. When the Victoria Symphony made any concerts or any new initiatives, when they led anything, the entire community felt its impact, wanted to know what was happening. And in fact, you know, because of local pride, there was that sense of it spreading, even not in Victoria alone, but all through the entire island. So the leadership capacity that I felt to enrich people's lives through music, and to have the sense that music belonged to all people, that we could reach all people, I felt was actually better in Victoria and inspired me greatly.
Going along those lines, and your philosophy of what an orchestra in the 21st century is and should be for a community, where does that come from, and what how do you approach that?
I think that this is a very critical question during our time. It is truly important for us to realize that music has a capacity right now to heal a lot in our world, to bring us a sense of understanding with the struggles and the concerns that we are all facing right now. Divisions in the world can be brought together through the wordless space of music, a chance to come together, to bring us together in a space that is about emotion. It's about humanity. It's about being humans together and remembering the very core value of what it is to express ourselves and to be, to live a life that's filled with highs and lows and challenges and struggles, but also joy. And so, you know, I feel that right now, music has never been more important. And I do think that classical music inside a community needs to focus itself on the community to find the voice of what the community truly is, and to reach that community, to draw people inside of that community, and to find a way to make everyone feel that it's for them, that it speaks to them. I have an Indigenous brother who we adopted when he was young. And he struggles in life. He has moments where he's doing really well, and he has moments where he has troubles. But I know that he feels great pride. Actually, he feels unique when he says, "I love the symphony. I go to the symphony," he will say to his friends. "I have a sister who's an orchestra conductor. I read Wuthering Heights." I once gave him Wuthering Heights and told him he was like Heathcliff. And he identifies in a prideful way with his connection to music and to classical music. And I think we can do that with people. We can, instead of making them feel that there's an us versus them, or that there is this kind of music is for me and that kind of music is for you, I actually think we can elevate people. We can make them feel a part of our community through the music. Maybe that's the only channel we have, is through the arts to connect people. And I think if there's ever a time in the lifetime of our planet, of our humanity, it's now, coming out of pandemic, feeling the ramifications of war, feeling the division in our society. All of these things lead me to think that music is ever more important.
Now that leads to another question, at least in my mind. Music overall has become, there are so many different forms, and there always has been, but it hasn't been as, well, I shouldn't say, it seems, as time goes on and developments happen, the eras of different music get smaller and smaller, and there's something new. And when you have the mass media we have now and the ability to just record anything and get it out there for people that we never had before, how do you go about bringing classical music to, say, kids and incorporating it to where they see it as a viable, another kind of music they can love, as opposed to just say, it used to be you were a classical fan or you were a jazz fan,
right?
And the classical players hated jazz. I mean, there were no jazz bands in colleges until really the 60s. Before that, college music departments would not let you have a jazz band. In the early 60s, the only jazz band at Northern Illinois University was sponsored by the Phi Mu Alpha music fraternity, and the music department didn't allow them to rehearse in the music building. And it really wasn't until 1969 when Ron Modell was hired and the NIU Jazz Ensemble started as an official part of the music department. Well, we have that, nowadays you've got people playing jazz and classical, no big deal. But with, how do you incorporate all that? How do you go about programming so that, people here will go to a concert and you may throw something in with hip hop or whatever. How do you go about putting that together so that everyone says, okay, I may not like this, but it's cool?
I think the key to our future is, first of all, diversity in terms of what we program and how we make connections, and also to be surprising, to never be predictable. Now, you might recoil from that idea, but actually, I truly, deep down, believe in the core repertoire of the orchestra as profound, profoundly important, profoundly beautiful. I will never say that we should move away from that core, but there are so many ways to connect this beauty to modern society, to our modern world, and specifically to our community. So, just using the program that I'm presenting this week, on it, you will find a diversity. You will see something you know already. You will see Mozart. You will see a Strauss Blue Danube. But most of you probably don't know the Butterfly Lovers Concerto. And yet, over the course of time, you would come to trust that it's probably something very beautiful. And in this case, it connects us to a different culture. There's a Chinese folk story involved in this music. This program connects us to film music. It takes us into a few places that are, in a sense, connected, in a very deep sense connected. There's the sense of some of this music is dance music, Appalachian Spring, connecting to the Blue Danube, for instance. Some of it is connected to stories such as the story of Memoirs of a Geisha or the story of the Butterfly Lovers. It's all related to the sense of the hope and renewal of spring. Every piece in this program makes us feel like we are coming out of the darkness of winter, the darkness of the pandemic, and into something hopeful, and most especially through the iconic feeling of Appalachian Spring to a newlywed couple in Pennsylvania building a new life together. So you can do that by adding in a piece of music that in this community, it could be a Latin American theme that connects, say, mariachi, or you could connect jazz to something else. You have to be very thoughtful about what is the underlying theme, what are the connections, and build bridges. You know, I was thinking about this even last night. We were rehearsing Mozart. And I was thinking just today about this. You know, so much about music is a relationship between things. So it's not just, we often as musicians think about the relationship between a B flat to a C, you know, the notes themselves. We sometimes just think of those as two points, a B flat and a C, but actually it's how a B flat sounds next to a C that makes all the difference. And if you have a bigger space, say it goes to a D or even an octave, that gives a different feeling. It's the same thing with dynamics. We often don't think about it this way. We think more, we prioritize notes, but actually a forte next to a piano is about the relationship of the feeling of the energy of a forte and the quietness of a piano. So when we connect music, when we connect ideas, and we connect them to reasons, like meaningful reasons of why we program them. And if we especially and most thoughtfully think about who our community is and how we can build those little connections one step at a time to people so that they say, hey, I don't know the rest of the program, but I like this idea. And then they discover some other things along the way. And they start to trust this artistic entity within their community that is guiding them to live a more beautiful life, a more enriched life, to think about their own life, to reflect their own selves when they sit into the concert and they suddenly realize that something understands them. You know, I think that with kids, you do the same thing. If you want to change the world within your community, within the orchestra community, you have these young minds that have not yet been sort of swayed into any directions. They're open. They don't actually have an opinion on jazz yet. They don't have a sense of whether classical music, you know, pretty early on you can get stereotypes. What we want to do is shake them up so that there is no stereotype. And I think classical music is for everybody. I think it's so exciting for everyone. And sometimes we have so much music in the background, and we have so many stereotypes that we think that classical music is elevator music. It's not. And so with young people, giving them a chance to feel what it's like to experience a concert. Music is an experience. And when we sit inside a concert, we experience something that changes us. And I want every kid to feel that and then to know that as they go forward.
Now, in a kind of a nuts and bolts question about this, we talk about getting kids experience and give them exposure here. One of the things about classical music is it tends to be a long form. It's about emotions over time. And subtleties and patience. And when we have this culture of 30, not even 30 second sound bites anymore, you know, 3.5 seconds and click, click, what's next? How do you think we should go about presenting this to children in a real a real way, you know, a concrete way. When I was growing up, there was still the Leonard Bernstein Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra. Yeah. And if you guys haven't watched any of those in 50 years, go back on YouTube and watch them. They are really, really good. And also, how do you expose children to the music? Well, I'm going into another question, so let me stop there and get your response.
Well, I think that the fact that kids are so society, kids and adults, are so connected to their iPhones, they're so connected to quick, they're so connected to visual, they're so connected to, you know, not even standing in a line and using their heads to think about something. They have to stand in line and look at something. They need to have something to do at every moment. Actually, this is the true gift that we offer when we give them the chance to experience a concert, because they experience the understanding of the power of being there and being in motion through something that changes as it goes. Now, with kids, that long-term effect is not a 40-minute Tchaikovsky symphony. It's 3 minutes of this moment and 5 minutes of that moment. And the trajectory of an education concert is about taking them through words as well as the music, because kids need to also know what they're listening for in a different way. You have to entertain in a unique way to keep the energy focused enough to listen. But I love to do education concerts with kids, and I love the power I feel. I feel like a magician, because with music, through the music, I am able to take a 2,000 seat hall that is literally jumping to the roof and all just swarming with energy, and I can even elevate that higher to the point where it's almost bursting, and then through the music, I can bring it to an absolute hush. And I find that to be the most powerful experience, and so telling about the power of music. It's like the kids show us without any, you know, the rest of us have learned how to behave. We know that even if we want to jump to our feet after a first movement, we're not supposed to. Well, you know, I don't even agree with that. But the point is, we've learned how to discipline ourselves to behave in the middle. Kids, they show us the realness of what music is. And so when we go through an education concert, we bring it up, we bring it down, and we go on the ride together. And a great education concert takes them through that spirit of what the emotion is. I think kids need to, it's got to be high octane, it's got to engage them from beginning to end. And I am passionate about finding ways to create smaller versions of greater experiences for them. So, in other words, a five minute journey through an emotion for a child, I think, is quite life changing.
How do you see the role of the youth orchestra in the community and working with the RSO?
I feel like the most important thing we could do, and this is the most challenging, it's not just to present the experience of listening to music, but truly, 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 for kids, everyone should be playing an instrument. They need to understand what it is to furrow their brows and to try and figure out a rhythm while it's still moving in front of their eyes, and to play the notes physically while it's carrying through. You know, the educational benefits on the brains of young people as musicians is so extraordinary. I fully believe that, you know, part of the reason why it's not understood by administrators and those who are trying to kind of define what are the educational priorities of young people is that they just don't understand how complex, how important it is for our minds to play music. And I think about you know, so often we don't understand to the degree that we think it's an emotional benefit. And it is, in part. It is an emotional benefit for children. It is a very big social benefit for children to be a part of a team, to be part of a group, to be needed, to have their voice heard when they play, and everybody needs them to be playing their part. But even more on an intellectual basis, what it does for our brain to require us to practice, to work hard at something, to actually viscerally see the benefit of our practice. We actually see how we started here and we got here through hard work. And our brain having to process all those mathematical, structural notes, physical, all the things that have to happen all at once. So I guess coming back full circle to your question, the youth orchestra is of incredible importance. Building young musicians within a community is of critical importance. Finding ways to, support music for young children. For instance, getting more parents involved with their 3-year-olds, their 4-year-olds, their 5-year-olds in music. I actually think that's very helpful. I remember being a young parent looking for enriching things to do with my child. I think there's a huge interest for grandparents and parents alike to say, I want to take my grandchild to this, to be a part of this event. And in a early way to get them involved with actually playing music, being a part of music, touching instruments, making sounds, all sorts of things like that.
Kind of shifting gears here. With an orchestra like Rockford, a regional orchestra, we have X number of concerts per year. So we're limited. I mean, there's a ton of pieces we've all wanted to play as musicians. And I know, just looking back at the over the years talking with Steve, things he wanted to conduct as a conductor that we just never were able to. We never got to Mahler 3, unfortunately. We never got to the big Strauss, we never did Alpine Symphony, much less any of the somewhat lesser known composers. If you've never heard Hans Rott's First Symphony, it's amazing. He went nuts basically because Mahler kept beating him in composition competitions. Say that 5 times fast. How do you look at, and we've touched on this somewhat, I realize, but how do you look at programming for an orchestra like Rockford, where you're kind of constrained by the old adage, the great is the enemy of the good? And also being able to play enough of the Burger Biggies, there's a reason Beethoven 5 is popular, it's pretty good. Getting enough of that in there, but also bringing in the newer composers. And kind of as an aside to that, where is your particular, where does your heart lie in terms of modern music? What type of modern music?
Okay, so first of all, programming for an orchestra. Everything a music director does has to be in a balance of moving forward in a variety of diverse ways. An orchestra needs to commit to its community and the endeavors that we just discussed about reaching children, but also reaching the needs of a specific community. It also needs to develop a great orchestra, to develop great quality and inspiring concerts. And that comes from a morale that is within the orchestra, an orchestra that's inspired, an orchestra that enjoys performing. And so it's all in balance. I think that my experience has been that there are always people in a community that are excited about one area and can get behind that area. And there's other people that are inspired about another area. So for instance, you might have a concert season of 6 concerts. You might have one of those concerts that you can identify as the place where we might do something a little bit, beyond where we normally go. You might decide that in the formula of what is to the good of the forward growth of your orchestra, one concert is the right way to go. And the other ones are Beethoven 5, as great as it is, it's not that large of an orchestra, so it's something that we can afford. And yet it can inspire, for instance, Beethoven 5 can inspire new audiences. And perhaps the dedicated Coronado Theater audiences that come all the time, maybe they're ready for Strauss. There's different needs within the community, and again, it comes back to diversity. It comes back to always being surprising. What are my thoughts about modern music? My thoughts about modern music are that when we program thoughtfully modern music, it changes how we all experience all music. When you listen to something that was written today by a composer of your community, of your country, of your time period, you are changed a little bit by that experience. You might not even like the experience. You might not even know why you're changed for experiencing it, but you might listen to Stravinsky differently the next time. Or you might experience Sibelius in a way that you didn't realize before, because our minds really do. First of all, they grow in a fondness for the things that we know. We know this about our minds. We do become more and more connected to the things we love. We decide what we love, and we gravitate more and more in loving those things. But we can also have a capacity to stretch ourselves and fall in love with new things as well. And I think there is this balance in all of us to want something that we feel comfortable with and familiar with and defines us, makes us feel, I love Chopin. This is me. But also, we're people that want to grow and move. We're never happy staying in the same place for too long. So there's always that desire. And I think an organization like the Rockford Symphony Orchestra defines that need to have momentum, vibrancy, and new music shouldn't be there just for the sake of new music. It should be there because somehow it brings us in contact with who we are and our lives, and makes us think differently, somehow connects to us in a way. When I program new music, I do it always in collaboration with programming that we already know and love. I never try to alienate an audience. I always try to find a way for us to grow gradually. And the same with an orchestra. When I work with an orchestra, I don't try to change the world all at once. We move together. We grow together. We progress together. We're a team together. And we aspire together. Within a community that we're fundraising for, because we have projects, because we have passions, together we find those passions that will define us, and we work together. There will be some people in this audience that get behind a music education initiative with full heart, and that will become what they contribute to the community and or to the orchestra. So I think it's all a part of a big, very important vision for growing the life experience within Rockford.
Getting away from music for a bit, and we've been talking about that quite a bit. When you're not conducting, when you're not raising two teenagers, when you're not chasing after the dog,
there's nothing left.
I was going to say, what do you do? Is it you come home from a concert and I need a double on this one? You know, what do you do otherwise?
Well, during the pandemic, when my conducting schedule became quite quiet, I discovered that I love to write. So I had always had this desire to explore not only the impact of music, but just performance. I would be inspired by my own reading about the mind, how we learn, how we process experiences. And so I found that the more I read, and then tried to write about these things, that I touched on, for me, what was the first truly creative experience. The experience of walking in the forest and having a flash of an idea come to me, and the next thing you know, it was an article about something. For me, writing was, there was not necessarily a specific audience, because writing about classical music or performance was, it's not mainstream stuff. But I was very lucky that on a digital platform called Medium, I was able to put articles and explore that. So that's one thing. The other thing I love to do, and has become very, very important to me as a musician, as a person who's trying to write as well, is just nature. I love to walk. I am so blessed in Vancouver, even though it's a large city, there are two areas that are fully forested, large areas with beautiful pathways through the woods. Of course, having a dog helps me be inspired every day to get out there. I wish I was Julia Child, and I love to cook and I bake, and I have found, as the mother of two teenagers, that making donuts goes a long way towards them being happy to be around their mother, especially now. Now it's sort of, I've reached the point of feed me.
It works with orchestras too.
Yeah. I've reached a point of feed me or leave me alone right now. But I just enjoy the good things in life and try and make them enrich each other, I guess.
Before we run out of time, any questions? Any questions you'd like to ask? Sir? What was your doctoral thesis?
Doctoral thesis was on St. John's Passion of J.S. Bach. And I basically deconstructed all of the... Bach had a way of creating musical symbols for the words. And I deconstructed all of that in my thesis.
And you came away after studying it that closely still liking it?
Actually, I fell truly madly in love with it. It's amazing how with music, this is one of the passions about music, is the deeper you go, the more rewarding it is. The more you know, the more you feel, the more that's revealed to you, the more beautiful it is. And I think for an audience, that's what I want for an audience. The more you hear inside the music, the more aware you are of what's there. And the more your perception opens up because of that experience, I mean, that's the beauty of what music is.
And the other interesting thing for me as a performer is that within certain parameters, there is no one right way to play something, which is why you can enjoy different performances of the same piece. I've been watching these snippets on YouTube of a site called Tonebase, which is basically a guy interviewing pianists and piano teachers. And the interesting thing I found is that a number of them, I was watching Emmanuel X and, I'm spacing the other one, they're talking about a piece of music, and he said, well, he says this, so we could do this, or we could do this. He says, which one? He says, I don't know. And the other interesting thing is having them talk very technically about various fingerings and how to do things. And he says, and you could leave this out. No one will know the difference. Which means, if he can do it, I can do it. Another question? Yes, sir. Choral music. Yes, please.
Yes, I love the choral repertoire. So I would say I've conducted most of the big choral works with orchestras, some of them several times. I had the experience in Victoria of having a massive 120-person choir, but also a chamber choir of 40, and also a very small choir called Vox Humana, which was about 12 a cappella voices. And so those three organizations enabled me to do all sorts of things, fantastic messiahs or Bach works in a stylized, very stylized version, massive works like Verdi Requiem, or even contemporary works with Vox Humana, things that were written specifically for choir and orchestra. So I think that I adore the repertoire, and I adore working with choirs in a community. And I, quite frankly, I think choir within a community is such a wonderful way for people within the community to make music with the orchestra. So,
sir.
Michigan. So when I first started, it was H. Robert Reynolds and then Ken Kiesler. Yeah.
Sir.
The symphony has nurtured a youth program. What are your thoughts about that, and how would you get involved with it?
Being involved with the youth program, how do you see yourself with that?
Do you mean the musicians in the schools program, or do you mean the youth orchestra, or all of the above? Well, I think the youth orchestra here sounds like it has been under wonderful musical leadership, and I think that what a music director would do is just be there, supportive, supporting it, and adding more and more programs to what's already thriving. So I think that it's going really well here. I think there's a lot of investment from the Rockford Symphony Orchestra in music education. I think that across the world, all orchestras need to do even more, that it needs to be understood that the future of music, the understanding of music is within the youth, and that less and less children are actually taking lessons. You know, when I grew up, it was really quite normal for little kids to be studying piano or violin or, you know, playing a musical instrument in the schools. And I think that is, for me, the of greatest importance, that every kid has an instrument that they play or that they sing, but that they're involved in performing music. And so, you know, I think what the Rockford Symphony is doing is fantastic. And I think that, you know, more and more investment in getting kids to play is where we're at.
Okay, well, we're almost out of time here. Oh, I should mention, if we were talking a bit about, you know, what music does to the brain and how it works with that, if you want a really good book that gets into that, I recommend Daniel J. Levitin's This Is Your Brain on Music. Daniel Levitin was a rock and roll bass player who then got into it and ended up with a PhD, and he's now a neuroscientist. And it's the first two or three chapters, if you know something about music, they're a little dull because it's pretty much basic, you know, this is a quarter note, this is a half note kind of stuff. Get beyond that, it's a fascinating book on just the amazing effect music has on the brain. Just as a quick aside, he talks about how listening to music activates more areas of the brain than pretty much anything else you can do, because music takes so much of the brain to decode its various nuances. Performing music is basically, there is nothing else you can do that uses the brain more and more completely than performing music. It's a fascinating book. The other one I recommend is by, I just spaced his name, it's called Musicophilia, Oliver Sacks, Dr. Oliver Sacks. It's called Musicophilia, and it is about the weird things music can do. And it's Oliver Sacks writes so beautifully anyway. It's a wonderful read.
And I've been inspired by both of those books, both of those writers. And if you have any interest, and if you want to learn a little bit more about my thoughts on music, you can go on my website. It's tanyamiller.com. And I actually have a writing area. And all of the things I've ever written about are there. So I welcome you to go and look at it.
Any other final comments? You know, like how wonderful the Rockford Symphony is, anything like that, you know?
Well, we'll see in two nights, won't
we?
Well, I think everybody lost their appetite. I'm sorry to say. No, I'm just kidding. I hope you had a wonderful lunch, and it was really great to spend time with you. I felt, I really felt your care as you listened to this. I felt your involvement. And that's one of the great gifts of being a musician, isn't it? We feel as much as we hear. And I feel the spirit of this Rockford Symphony community here in this room. And I am really very excited about the orchestra that you have. They're a wonderful group of musicians. They will be performing a wonderful concert on Saturday night. And thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
So thank you for coming. And as always, my admonition to you is come to the concert Saturday and bring a friend or three, okay?